Yesterday, there were fewer people, so I didn't want to introduce Kotzke. I just talked a little bit about one category of ideas. But today, let me give you a little introduction to who Rabbi Nachum Mendel of Kotzke was, and then we'll spend the next week and a half trying to understand some of his thought, although it's very difficult because he didn't write much, and that which he did write when he passed away, he instructed his children to burn it. He was a very interesting personality. So we don't have anything written short of a letter that he wrote to one of his Talmidim. We don't really have any Torah that he wrote, but we have collected sayings, very short, pithy maxims of the Kotzke. Kotzke was born in 1787 in Rabbi Nachum Mendel of Kotzke. He learns by the Chosid of Lublin, one of the great first-generation Hasidic Rabbanim. He gets very close there with a very non-conventionalist, non-conformist Talmud there, who probably is one of the most well-known Talmidim, Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, who starts the Hasidus of Pashischa. So there's a lot of Pashischa DNA in the Kotzke Rebbe. In terms of just giving you the details, in 1827, Reb Simcha Bunim, who was Yaakov Yitzchak's son, Pashischa, Simcha Bunim, passes away, and then basically Pashischa Hasidus becomes Katz Hasidus. Okay? Now, in 1839, there's a break, a very, very rancorous rift between Katz and Mordechai Yosef Lehner, the Ishbitz, and the Ishbitz moves away from Katz and starts his own Hasidus, even though he had been a very, very loyal Talmud of the Katz for many years. And ultimately, there's a splitting. There's really no successor to Kotzke. The successor to Kotzke is the Chidush Yehorim, which starts the Ger dynasty. So this is giving you a sense of, it's a lot of commotion. This is not a very harmonious lineage. So Pashischa becomes Kotzke. Kotzke splits off into Kotzke and Ishbitz, and then Kotzke leads to the Gera lineage, which becomes much more stable. Now, what makes this such a different form of Hasidus? Almost it's hard to even call it Hasidus. People associate Kotzke with Hasidus, and I'll try to tell you why. What makes it different? I think there are three points that make it very, very discrepant with classic Hasidus. Hasidus try to reinvent or to reinforce the role of happiness, of simcha, of joy. It's something that I think people who don't understand Hasidus feel is very shallow, but they don't understand that it was a very forlorn and destitute period in Jewish history. The Gullus had lasted 1,700 years. It's a very dark period in Jewish history. And Simcha was an opportunity both to reconnect to Hashem by the sense that Hashem was still there despite the darkness and the bleakness of Eastern Europe, and there's a joy in that relationship, and the optimism about life and redemption. And dancing was an opportunity to reinforce joy and to create joy. In Kotzke, it's very hard to sense the joy. The joy is replaced by fear. The joy is replaced by stern authority. Remember, the Kotzke Rebbe secludes himself for 20-plus years, and he barely comes out of his room. And people, Hasidim, are allowed here and there to enter his room, but there are accounts. I mean, I know what it felt like to speak to Rav Lichtenstein, and I didn't feel stern fear. I just felt overwhelmed by awe, but I have accounts of Hasidim that just simply walked into his room and melted by his stern gaze and by the way he looked. So there's a sternness of expectations, and I'll talk about expectations in a moment. Dancing in Kotzke was not an opportunity to connect with other people. Remember, dancing and singing are meant to be collective experiences. When you're learning, it's an individual experience. When you're dancing, you're connecting your emotions, your spirit with other people. Dancing was an opportunity to transcend yourself and to try to find some higher truth. It wasn't the same collective experience. I think the element of joy was replaced by fear, the pursuit of truth and sternness and august and solemnity. Second issue is Hasidus tries to be a democratizing experience because so many Jews who weren't learning in the 18th century felt excluded, felt disenfranchised, felt almost disowned by Judaism in the classic Torah-based Judaism, and Hasidus says, let's create these large frameworks that can embrace, and you see, Hasidus today has become very insular, modern-day Hasidus, because of the Holocaust, because of the opposition to the State of Israel, because of secularism, but Hasidus is meant to be an embracing, and the notion of a chatzer, where people no longer lived yomtiv in family settings, but they went to the Rebbe's chatzer, and they spent time with other Hasidim based on common interests, and the Kotz didn't want a lot of Hasidim. He's like shocked that there's so many Hasidim. He said, I only wanted there to be 300 Hasidim because he was so covetous of that truth and authenticity. You can't reach authenticity in large frameworks and communal frameworks. Authenticity has to be ironed out individually and personally. One said, I only wanted to be 300 Hasidim and I would take them into the forest and we'd find truth and we'd feed each other man. And many, many claim that was the cause of the rift. This very, very bitter rift between Kotzke and Ishbitz is that Rav Mordechai Yosef Lehner, the Ishbitz, was operating as almost like an underground Hasidic Rebbe in the Kotzke environment, but the basic rift was Katz didn't want Hasidim. Katz didn't want a lot of Hasidim. And Rav Yosef Lehner was being a very, very magnetic, kinetic personality. A lot of Hasidim were congregating around him. It was just a conflict between two different ways to view growth. Should growth be performed these large and masses of people? Should they be fewer, much more elitist in classic Hasidus? A third difference is that Hasidus is meant to provide, it touches a little on the first issue, comfort in groups and larger frameworks, even an acceptance and an embrace of people's failings. Every Jew has an internal holiness. Remember, we spoke about Lubavitcher Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. Every Jew has a nefesh elokim, imal mamish, no matter how far he falls, Jews are embraced. And it's not just simcha, but it's allowing for the frailty of the human condition. Kotzk was an environment that I can only liken to a boot camp. You came into Kotzk, you were expected to perform. If you didn't say a svara, the rumors were that if you didn't say a new svara every 3 days, you were kicked out of the base medrash. It was very, very much built in expectations and demands. People used to say this old adage that if you went to Kotzk, your bones were straightened out, literally like a boot camp. Like they straightened you out. The demands were very high because if you're looking for that internal truth, then it's almost endless. And by softening demands, and you're not going to allow people to find that truth. It's by ratcheting up the demands. So those are the three differences that I sense. I'm sure there are others between Hasidus and Kotzk. It's not simcha, but yira. It's not collectivist and democratic, but it's elitist and almost forbidding, or it's elitist and exclusionary. And number three, it's not embracing and tolerant, it's demanding and forbidding. So the question then becomes, why is it even seen as Hasidus? What about Kotzk made a Hasidus? That's a really good question. And I wonder if the Kotzke Rebbe had lived in a different period, if he really would have been called a chassid or just would have been called a maverick, very different Rosh Hashiva, who just had very, because he was a big Talmud Chacham. I think the three parts of Kotzke that are similar to Hasidus is number one, the ability and the willingness to reinterpret Psukim in novel ways. Hasidus believe that Hashem continues to deliver information. So I would never interpret a Pasuk that isn't based on grammar or rules of grammar, or it isn't based on a medrash. But in the world of Hasidus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu continues to reveal himself to people in each generation in ways that he didn't reveal himself necessarily in previous generations. That's what angered a lot of the non-Hasidim. So you see very, very creative engineering of psukim and words meaning different things. Not necessarily gematria, but remember I told you yesterday, based on psychology, lo yecha el zar, don't have any foreign gods in your world, don't make God foreign. That's not what the pasuk means, but it provides a certain psychological truth about not being far and distant from Hashem. Number two, the decentralization of Gemara. There's almost like a mocking of people that were learning Gemara without spirit, without truth, without it trickling down. And we know that that can happen. You can just learn all day and be lost in the world of learning, but have that world very distant from your soul, from your spirit. And the flip side, a centralization of tefillah and a willingness to play with the margins of tefillah, to daven in different ways, in different times. So that whole tefillah Torah interaction is very Hasidic sounding. And then finally, the fact that there's this search for internal truth, getting down to the core of human beings. I think in Hasidus, it's more systemic. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe is writing a system that will apply to every human being. This is how human beings are built. Chachma, Bina, Das, Chabad. In the world of Kotzk, there's a search for internal truth. That's what makes it modern, subjective truth, but it isn't something that can be spread and disseminated across a broader community. It's a very, very different form of Hasidus. I guess the best way to end today's shiur is, the little shiur is, it's not a sustainable model. Kotzk really doesn't become a dynasty or lineage of Hasidus. Kotzk bears Ger, and then Ger adopts some of the Kotzke pursuit of truth, some of the unique approaches to Hasidus, but it creates its own Hasidus. So it's basically, there's no Kotzke Hasidus today. Kotzke was this very, very truthful, honest, harsh, stern, demanding, exceptional. He once claimed, and I'll talk about this a little bit later on, that he feels his neshama came from the first base on Mikdash. Like it was some person that landed from a different world who almost stirred people to try to find truths that were beyond them in the modern world, because the world of Yiddishkeit was still a little bit ancient, because they weren't updating it based on new discoveries in psychology and subjectivism. And he demanded people, and he sent a shock through the system. But then the system, having received that shock and having become activated and alerted, then resettled, but without the Chatzker Rebbe. So the Chatzker Rebbe, it's not a Chasidus, it's a person. It's a person who maybe in a different era, maybe we even wouldn't even call the Chasidus a Rebbe, but he becomes one of the great godfathers of Chasidus, because his statements percolate throughout all of Chasidus, not just through Ger Chasidus, and become almost like a biblical statement, that this is the Tanakh of Chasidus, some of the statements of Katz. Again, we don't have much of his writing, but his views. And in Mirtz Hashem, over the next couple of days, I'll try to catalog some of the ideas that he had by looping together or stitching together a few of his statements. Okay? Have a good day, everyone. Have a good day.